Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the FBN Holdings full year 2017 and first quarter 2018 financial results conference call. Following an overview by FBN Holdings management team, an interactive Q&A session will be available. I would now like to hand the call over to Mr. UK EK, Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us on this investor and analyst presentation of our full year 2017 and first quarter 2018 results. My name is UK Eke, the Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings. Also on this call with me today are Dr. Shola Adedutan, who is the Managing Director of First Bank Nigeria Limited. I also have Kayode Akinkugbe, the CEO of the FBN Quest Merchant Bank. I have Wale Ariyibi, the CFO at Holdco, Patrick Iyamabo, CFO at the Commercial Bank, Segun Alebiosu, the CRO at the Commercial Bank. I confirm that we had posted this presentation earlier today, and I hope you've had time to look through the presentation. On that basis, I would start from slide 5 and run through to slide 8. The key headlines will be gross earnings of 595 billion, which is 2.3% growth year on year, and this is driven largely by interest income on the back of enhanced yields and volumes growth in investment securities. Conversely, for Q1 2018, we saw a reduction year on year on the gross earnings, 138.9 billion. This is down 1.6% due to declining yields on investment securities. For net interest income, we recorded 8.9% growth year on year for the full year, closing at 331.5 billion. And I can also confirm that for first quarter of 2018, interest income declined marginally by 3.4%. This is due to constrained lending environment as well as lower yields in treasury assets. If you exclude FX rebound gains, which we booked for 2016, non-interest income grew 17.6% year on year, and we sustained that pattern in the first quarter of 2018 as we saw increase of 2.5% year on year to 24.8 billion. This basically underscores our diversified earnings base, largely from non-commercial bank businesses. Specifically, we are seeing increase on quarter-on-quarter basis from insurance business to the group profits. And for the first quarter of 2018, the commercial business was 9% of group profits. For 2017, it was 3.4%. Now, we're glad to report a deceleration in credit impairment charge by 33.5% year-on-year, closing the year at 150 billion. This is on the back of improved risk governance, and we'll speak to that in greater detail when we get to the risk management section. Again, we see that the reduction in impairment charge continued even for the first quarter of 2018, declining by 12.1% to 25.3 billion. Again, it reflects the steady improvement in asset quality at the group level and the operating entities. Now, for 2017 financial year, operating expenses increased by 7.7% year on year. This is far lower than inflation rate, which averaged about 15%. And in total, the cost to income ratio closed at 53.5%. Now, on the back of enhanced earnings, improving efficiency, the profit before tax and profit after tax were up 147% and 179% respectively at full year. However, it was down 6% and 9% respectively in Q1. I'll talk about the cost-to-income ratio in more detail when we get to the how we're going to do business going forward, because there are efficiencies we're driving across the group. But let me quickly say that the sustained progress we've recorded on NPL remediation and recovery, we're beginning to see improvement in our NPL ratios. For 2017 full year, NPL ratio was 22.8%, and this compares very favorably with 24.4% we achieved in 2016. And for the first quarter of 2018, the NPL was down further to 21.5%. Indeed, if you look through the slide 7 chart there, you would see that NPL cost of risk and NPL coverage, they continue to impress quarter on quarter and year on year. Non-performing loans were largely in guidance with in line with guidance, except for additional impairment charge we had to take on Nine Mobile, as well as the impact of FCY translation on legacy loans. I will talk about the capital positions at the operating entities. The commercial bank and the merchant bank remain adequately capitalized at 17.7% and 15.7% for full year. And if you adjust for first quarter of 2018 profit, the CAR at the commercial bank will inch up to 18.5%. Overall, the return on average equity inched up in 2017 to 7.6% from 3% in 2016, while the return on average assets was up 1% from 0.4% in 2016. I'll move very quickly to slide 8, where we have indicated improving macroeconomic environment. I think the point to make here is that in general, we see improvement in macro indicators, and this is on the back of growing reserves, stable oil production volumes, and also rising prices. However, the market remains volatile, and we think that this volatility may persist for current year. However, we do believe that we are steady and we are sharp-footed, and in our quest to reposition this group for long-term growth, we think we're on the right path. I would very quickly hand over to Wale, the CFO at the holding company, to take us through the financial review slides. Thank you.
My name is Wale Ariyibi, CFO FBN Holdings PLC. I'll be going through slides number 11 to 14. Starting from slide 11, first and foremost, I'd like to give a general overview of the financial performance. If you check slide number 34, that is a snapshot of the result of operation of the group for full year 2017 and first quarter of 2018. That gives all the analysis as well as the snapshot of the financial position. Now, slide number 31 is about the guidance, and slide 21 to 23 will be speaking to the strategic performance of the strategic business unit of FBN Holdings PLC. In summary of slide 11 to 14, what we see is resilient earnings potential of the group, because this group, as we say, it's a cash-generating machine. We see the resilience in our earnings, a strong retail franchise, and stable, steady funding. Also, diversification of earnings. If you don't mind, if you check our financial statement, the full financial statement, on note 6, we have segmental reporting of various contributions of the entities towards the holdings result for the full year. And on a summarized basis, the entities apart from commercial banking group represent 27% of PBT and 25% of PAT in 2017, which is a testament to the fact that the decision to go the holding company route was well thought out, and the directors were clairvoyant in taking this position. So I'm on slide 11. On slide 11, which is speaking to the resilient earnings of despite declining yields in the market, you notice that across full year 2016 and Q1 2018, if you focus on the graphical analysis of non-interest income, as a percentage of non-interest income, digital banking, e-business from the commercial banking group has increased in terms of proportion from 13% in full year 2016 to 22% in 2018 Q1. Similarly, income from insurance premium, another aspect of our group, has increased from 5% in 2016 to 14% in 2018. Therefore, we have identified clear opportunities and areas for growth within the group, and we think this will ramp up, and we are sure that revenues in subsequent periods will only improve and increase as we complete projects that have been undertaken across the group. Slide 12. This is continuous focus on electrical efficiencies within the group. And you will see the way our OPEX has moved. Essentially, the increase in regulatory costs constitutes 14.3%. 14.3% of OPEX. That is coming from regulatory costs. Regulatory costs is comprised of AMCON levy as well as NDIC premium. You will know that AMCON levy is computed as 0.5% of total assets plus 0.5% of one-third of credit-related off-balance sheet items. And that is why that has packed up. But important thing to note on this slide is that we remain resilient and focused on ensuring that we contain costs within our guidance, which is below 55%. I move to slide number 13. Slide 13 is talking to the strong retail franchise of the group as well as well-diversified funding basis. The topmost slide will speak to how the type of funding we have, and other liabilities represent only 6%, but the real funding is from deposits from customers, which speaks to the strong franchise and the fact that the investing public and marketing public have very strong belief in this strong franchise. So deposits from customers represent 61% and from banks 13%. This is talking to stable funding of the group. In terms of deposit by currency, LCY represents 85%, while FCY is 15%. And in terms of type of deposit, again, as usual with us, because it's a strong retail franchise that we have, CASA, the i.e. current and savings account, represent about 70% year-on-year, and this we've maintained. Currently, in Q1 2018, it's 69% to 31% between term deposits and CASA. And if you look at, if you do a deep dive into First Bank itself, you will see how the deposits have been gathered from retail banking essentially. I move to slide number 14, which is the concluding slide for my presentation. This is talking about the optimizing the balance sheet of the group. And we have managed the balance sheet effectively such that over the course of the period, you see the number of times we have leveraged the balance sheet and the gross loans to deposit, as well as our capital ratios, which my GMD had spoken about earlier on. In terms of capital adequacy, for the commercial banking, it's 18% as at Q1 2018, well above 15% that is regulatory minimum. For the FBN Quest Capital, FBN Quest Merchant Bank, I beg your pardon, it's 15.7% full year, 15.1% in Q1 2018, against 10% requirement. We believe at this level of capital adequacy ratio that without factoring profit of 3 months ended 31st March 2018, that this is adequate for the business that we want to pursue. So the bottom left side is talking about risk-weighted asset and the component for First Bank as well as the capital ratios. At this point, I will hand over to Sheikh Mohammed Bushu, the CRO of First Bank Nigeria Limited.
I'm Olusegun Alebiosu, Chief Risk Officer of First Bank. We continue our strategy of improving the risk environment, more importantly, credit culture and governance. Based on what we've done in the last 18 months, we've seen vintage NPL less than 1% while we accelerate recovery and remedial actions on legacy assets. We are focused on cleaning up the legacy assets as we have our eyes set on 2019 target for single-digit NPL. We are convinced that with the strategy we have in place, we will not find ourselves in a situation of high NPL in the medium term, and going forward, we will be able to define our risk appetite and risk assessment criteria. In 2017, we met our cost of risk target. We guided on between 6 and 7%, and we ended up with 6.4. But we missed our target on NPL and our loan growth. For NPL was because of the impairment of Nine Mobile and foreign currency translation impact on legacy foreign currency impaired loans. And you appreciate the fact that the entire market was affected by the Nine Mobile impact, and that NPL at year-end for most competitors also moved up almost 200 to 300 basis points. Well, we missed our loan growth target for 2017, of course, because of the operating environment. I was basically treasury play, but in 2018, we are set, to grow, looking at what the market dictates. We believe that by the end of 2018, we'll be on course towards our NPL guidance, and that the risk environment will have been improved appreciably in such a way that the health of the institution will have improved further. I'll pass back to the Group Managing Director for the...
Thank you very much, Shego. I just want to focus briefly on the market-specific information we provided on slides 21 to 23. Essentially, we want to do a deeper dive on the various operating entities, and we see with respect to the commercial bank, sustained profitability, indeed growth in profitability year on year, resulting from efficient balance sheet management. And this underscores the fact of that franchise being a cash machine, and we do believe that the processes that are being retooled right now, and the point made by the CRO around the risk culture, we do think that we'll continue to see profitability increase year on year. We also want to call out the very strong funding base with low-cost deposits at 83%, about the highest in the industry, and that also resulted in low funding cost of 3.1% for full year 2017. For first quarter of 2018, we are seeing funding costs at 3%. This obviously has impact on our NIMs. The key drivers of growth for this business area will be retail banking business, commercial bank, and increased treasury activities. Not to forget digital banking solutions, which we are deploying, as you will see in the presentation. For the merchant bank, I think the key theme there to call out on slide 22 will be the acquisition of FBM Quest Securities and FBM Quest Asset Management by the FBM Quest Merchant Bank. Obviously, this is to broaden the suite of products that are available to our existing clients and potential clients. It will also enhance the quality of income. So I think the natural consequence of that acquisition, you would see a growth in OPEX. It is not unexpected, but it occurred in 2017, and we will see a ramp-up of activities by those operating entities, which will obviously result in very high ROEs for 2018. Now, with respect to the insurance business, this is a very profitable business for us. It has remained so since we entered that market. And we are seeing 29% CAGR over 4 years in terms of gross written premium. For 2017, we saw on a year-on-year basis 51% growth in gross written premium. And this is coming largely from the retail segment, which is sustainable in respect to the life insurance. Of course, we are doing well on the corporate insurance and also the broking business. In summary, the insurance franchise is returning a high ROE of 38.8%. This is for the full year 2017, And for 2018, we already have crossed the 45% mark with respect to ROE. So we will maintain the growth trajectory we are seeing in insurance. We think it's a very good space for us to sustain growth and distinct advantage from. As we conclude, I want to draw attention to our priorities. This is basically anchored on the three-year planning cycle, which we announced last year, and we have done a full year, and we are very happy with the results we are seeing. This is slide 25. We are pursuing new revenue sources, enhanced non-interest income sources. Digital banking is a critical play for us, and the commercial bank will lead the market in this regard. Insurance will also be a very strong contributor, even as we push for efficiency. So overall, there are three strategic priorities we are pursuing. One, enhancing the revenue generating capacity, and this will be achieved organically at the operating entities, and also collaboration and synergy at the group level. We are seeing improvements in this regard. Second will be driving operational efficiency, which we talked about, to keep pushing costs down, and we believe that the cost to serve will keep coming down so that our margins can be enhanced. Also, we will be focused very clearly on enhancing our risk governance, as the CRO of the Commercial Bank mentioned. So overall, we expect to increase our pace of customer acquisition and deploy technology to serve our clients, and you will see the details of what we have done in this regard on slide 27. But we think that the greatest lever that we have for the 2018 year will be sustained improvement in the risk governance and processes, which will ensure that the new credit culture, which we have institutionalized, remain embedded in our various operations. So on this basis, we are delighted to provide guidance for 2019, which is really what we are driving towards. ROE for 2019, we should be looking at 20%. For cost-to-income ratio, we believe for 2019, we should be around about 50%. And for the NPL, we expect to be below 5%. This is for 2019. Slide 31 gives specific guidance for 2018 financial year. And we believe that we should be able to achieve these numbers based on where we are currently. So on this note, I will thank you for listening, and I will then open the lines for questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach your equipment. Once again, that's star 1 to ask a question. And we will take our first question from Tolu Alamutu of Exotics Capital. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for hosting the call. I did have a... Hello? Can you hear me?
Please go ahead. Yes.
Okay. I just have a few questions, please. First, what FX rate are you using to convert your balance sheet as of the end of last year and also the end of March? Secondly, on risk-weighted assets, on slide 14 of the presentation, it looks like risk-weighted assets fell to 2.5 trillion from 3 trillion in the first quarter. Is that correct? And if it is, can you maybe tell us how that was achieved? Third question is on the large problem loans that you've mentioned on previous calls. Can you maybe give us an update on the level of coverage and on recoveries on Nine Mobile, on Aiteo, on Atlantic Energy, and also Ontario, please? And finally, can you maybe give us an update on your issuance plans and on what you intend to do with the bond that's callable in August of this year? Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I think we've got four questions. Perhaps we'll just clear these four and go to the next one. So, CFO, please.
The first question, or the part A of the first question, is what FX rate was used to convert as at end of 2017? We used FX rate where we think, where we believe, where we are certain that we play in. So at the end of 2017, we used 330.
Okay.
Okay.
Has all changed for Q1 2018. We used 330 against Naira to dollar. I will allow my other colleagues from the Commercial Bank to take the questions on LIWAC and COBRI as well as non-callable and issues.
Yes, on the risk-weighted asset, yes, it fell in Q1 because we have some aggressive repayments, one of which I'm sure you're aware of, CEPLAT paying off the entire industry on their low exposure. So we have aggressive repayment Q1 on our loan book. The second one is on key accounts and coverage and recovery. You mentioned Nine Mobile. For Nine Mobile, we took 35% impairment, and then the industry is going through the adjustment on lease. And when Telelogy finishes with the acquisition, of course, the account will be back to performing. On ITO is back to performing. It's now off the NPL book. And on AE remain on the NPL book. We are still going through the bureaucracy towards resolution of AE. As we've said earlier, the resolution of AE remain political. And although the assets are producing, but resolution remain political. And we are going through that to ensure resolution. And then provision on AE is 30%.
Ine, the treasurer of this call with us, he's going to take update on issue one.
Okay, in terms of our callable bond that falls due, the good thing is the smaller of our two issues out there is just $300 million. So we're still at this point exploring the options that are available to us. Either we choose to call it or otherwise, or refinance it in either by new issuance or any other means. So we're running through that process. We still have a fair bit of time ahead of when we need to make that determination. And depending on market conditions, we'll do what is in the best interest of the institution.
Thank you very much. Can we have the next questions, please?
We'll take our next question from Muyiwa Oni of SBG Securities. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for the presentation. I have a few questions. The first is a follow-up question on your AE exposure. Just wanted to understand how critical that resolution is to your NPL guidance of 15% by the end of 2018. So assuming the political impasse continues, do you...
Hello?
I don't should take on the question.
Can we take the next question, please, if we've lost Muyiwa?
We will take our next question from Clement Adewuyi of Cardinal Stone. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for this call. My first question is on your IFRS 9 implementation. I want to find out whether you took additional provisions on Atlantic Energy based on IFRS 9 or whether the current provisions you took was adequate currently. So that's my first question. I also noticed that you guided towards a loan growth of about 7-9%. And I'm also thinking that do you think the new rule of IFRS 9 is going to impede your loan growth or accelerate your 12-month CPL? If you aggressively go your loan, do you see that affecting your risk management framework, or do you see that affecting your ability to grow loans in 2018? Then also, we are aware that you mentioned, I think last Q3, that you're expecting a write back of about 20 billion, I think, from Ontario. I would like to get a sense of what the status of that asset. Should we expect recovery? When should we expect the recovery? Then lastly, I think what Muyiwa was trying to ask is that your NPL guidance of 15%, is the resolution of Atlantic Energy factored in or is barring the resolution of Atlantic Energy? Thank you.
Thank you. very much, Clement, and particularly for clarifying the question you wanted to raise. Again, we've got four questions, so let's just deal with them, and then we'll take the third or fourth call, actually.
Please. Yes. Okay. Let me start with the question that Mujua was trying to ask. If the 15% guidance took account of AE, the answer is no. Okay? So if we get AE this year, the NPL, resolution will accelerate. The other issue is on Ontario. The Ontario 20 billion promise for last year did not come in, but for 2018, plan to make it in. There were administrative issues that needed to be resolved, and when you're going through that, you need to get that done before you book it in the books. It's big enough for something to for you to ensure that proper things are done before they are recognized. And IFRS 9 on loan growth, we don't expect IFRS 9 to actually destroy loan growth. What is going to happen is that you will now prioritize what type of loan you want to book. Okay, is it trade? You know, a capital charge on loan on trade loans is about 0.2. It's about 20%. So your capital charge will be low. So the impact on it will be, again, if you also look at our targets that we wanted to increase our investment grade exposure from what we have now to 40% over a 3-year period, that will tell you that the PD, probability of default for investment grade, will be low. So the impact on capital charge will not be all that too high. But if you now look at the environment and see how you might want to also accommodate some SMEs, then you now see what target of SME you're going to build into it. And that fed into our guidance for the year when we're sent to say that instead of we telling you that we're going to take our cost of risk guidance to about 4, we are still saying 6-7 because we have IFRS 9 at the back of our mind. Lastly, is the issue of IFRS 9 implementation. Yes, we did. And for AE, well, we look at it because AE itself, based on tenor, has not expired. What has expired is just the process. But if you look at it, it has not. Because the tenor of AE still has about 2 years to go. So if you look at AE, we've made provision based on what has expired in the books, and then we've taken 30% on entire. So if we aggregate on what has expired in the books, we've taken almost 50% on what has expired in the books. But we look at ourselves and ask, are we going to suffer more than 30% haircut on AE? To us, the answer is no, because the resolution is political, and the asset itself is producing. So we're not looking at the cash flow issue that we're going to suffer from, but from political issue that we're going to resolve.
Thank you very much, Shego. Can we move on to the next questions, please?
Thank you. As a reminder, to signal for a question, please press star 1. We will take our next question from Ola Ogunsanya of RENCAP. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon, and thank you for the presentation. I have a number of questions, but firstly, on the cost of risk guidance of 6-7%, it seems really high considering how long the cleanup process has been going on for. And I know there was some mention of the impact of IFRS 9, but is it also correct to infer that this 15% guidance is really largely based on write-offs and no recoveries or write-backs this year? Secondly, on the sale of Rainbow Town Development, so I understand the transaction was expected to close in October 2017, but that doesn't seem to be the case. What happened there, and how does that affect the numbers? So if the sale is concluded this year, does it translate to the cost of risk line, or would it just be profits from the sale of an asset? And thirdly, on the NIM guidance for 2018, I see it's higher relative to what you did in 1Q. So what really is driving that guidance? I would imagine that the risk will be more to the downside given the direction of rates over the past couple of weeks. And my final question is on higher oil prices and to what extent that has helped with the recovery process. And I ask this because of specific news flow on an oil and gas company going bust. So if you could please give instances of when you've actually seen any improvements in the ability of some of your oil and gas customers to repay their loans, that would be very helpful. I think those are all my questions. Thank you.
CRO of the bank.
Thank you. Let me start with the last one on high oil prices and how that will affect oil, our portfolio. If you observed, about 42% of our NPL is in oil and gas. And so with rising oil price, what we've done in the last quarter, Q4, is that we'll be able to restructure most of our oil and gas exposure. And however, we need to wait for the normal two quarters before we can declassify. So we have many in oil and gas services versus a lot that are going to work. And then cash flow will start coming in as from Q2. And when we see that Q2, then it will be. So most of what you're going to see is that oil price for us at 50, even at 45, we will be able to push through our restructuring. So, and that feeds into the first question you raised, that our NPL reduction, is it going to come from write-off or from recoveries? And I will say to you, it's going to come from recoveries and restructured loans, because we discovered that even people with tank farms that could not do anything for 2 years, now they could do so much from throughputs, even without even lifting anything. So we've seen development in the market and we've seen improvement that we believe that we'll be able to achieve this. Now, looking at the company that you said went bust in the U.S., Ares or something, First Bank does not have exposure to that. And so we are out of that. So whatever the oil price is, we are not guided by that. I think basically we have, the cost of risk of 6.6 to 7 was based on the fact that we appreciate that creating new loans might also require impairment charge immediately, which is what IFRS 9 is talking about. And so if we build that into it, the cost of risk will go up, for the first year. And so this will be different from the prior period where you do general provision and you only do impairment, when the loan is impaired. And so we've guided that, and that's what we factored into our cost of risk.
For Rainbow Town, your question on Rainbow Town, we are very optimistic that in the course of 2018, we conclude the sale of Rainbow Town. It's an equity investment in the holding company. However, at this point, the balance of the equity investment of $1.7 billion was fully impaired in 2016 account. And that's why if you check our financial statement, you will see impairment of investment. It's zero this year, 2017, but $1.7 in 2016. When we sell, whatever we get will be gain from sale of investment.
I think there's a question on name guidance, and the CFO at the Commercial Bank will take that question.
Okay, this is Patrick. The name for the Commercial Bank was about 8.8% for 2017 and 8.5% for 1Q 2018. At a group level, that came to about 8.4% for the whole group. We've guided between 8 and 8.5%. 8.5% being the higher end and 8% being the lower end for where we think we expect NIM will pan out. Part of what we expect to play out in the course of the year that was not fully manifest in the first quarter is our loan growth, which we expect will further improve yield and strengthen the NIM. So we're comfortable with the 8 to 8.5 guidance that we've shared.
Thank you. Next question, please.
We will take our next question from Adelonke Akinsola of Chapel Hill. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for your call today. My first question is a follow-up on IFRS 9. I would like to know the particular impact that would have on your capital adequacy ratio. So if you'd be specific on how much IFRS 9 would deplete your capital ratio, that would be really helpful. My second question is on dividends. So I would like to know if you'd continue to pay dividends from your subsidiaries in 2018, and if that is not expected to continue in 2018, what sort of payout ratio guidance would you give, and if you expect it to persist, at what point should we expect dividends to be paid by the bank itself? Those are my questions. Thank you.
Very much, Darren. Okay, let's take another question, please.
We will take our next question from Rona Gardia of EFG Hermes. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for the presentation. And thanks for taking my questions. Mine is just really a follow-up of some of what's been asked earlier. Firstly, on your FX rate, you say you used an FX rate of 330. If you were to use an FX rate of 360, what impact does that have, A, on your capital, and what sort of FX revaluation gains would that crystallize? My second question is on Nine Mobile. You said you've taken 35% provision. If you could just highlight or mention what the total exposure to that loan is. And from what I understand, you know, there's a direct exposure and an indirect exposure. So is that 35% provision just on the direct exposure, or is that on aggregate? And my last question, I guess, is a follow-up from the previous caller, is IFRS 9. If I look at the level of provisions you've made, it seems comparatively less relative to what some of your peers have taken. So is that something that will increase through the rest of the year, or how do you quantify what would you say is the key difference in as to why your provisioning level is relatively less compared to peers? Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll give you the responses to the questions, starting with the CRO.
Yes. Nine Mobile, we've taken 35%, and exposure is 1.25% of the loan book. And we all know that reality impairment should be lower than that, but the market was conservative, and they're looking forward to technology that when the acquisition is concluded, probably in Q2 or Q3, the acquisition by technology will become rectified, and then the loan itself will become rectified, and then impairment will appear. We all have to take our impairment, and then the NPL will go away. Now, on IFRS 9, being less than competitors, impairment will be taken for us. I mean, it's aggressive because at about 150 billion for the year. I'm not sure there's any competitor in the market with that level of provision. Even in Q1, the provision will be of 23 billion. I'm not sure there are a few competitors in the market with that level of provision. And what we're trying to do is to say we need to be conservative, and then we'll put forward and say this is IFRS 9. And also looking forward that if we create loan this year, we're also going to do the impairment. And we did not shy away from the fact that will be the reality, and then we'll put forward 6-7% guidance on cost of risk. We'll pull that across, and that's how it's going to look like.
Okay, I'll take the question on dividend. This is UK AK. So I think the short answer to the question is that yes, CoCo will continue to distribute dividends to shareholders to the extent that the operating entities are able to upstream dividend to us. As you know, CoCo is just an investment vehicle, and that we have no need to retain capital at the CoCo level. Second point to make is that our operating entities that are regulated by capital remain very, very well capitalized. As I mentioned in my presentation, if you capitalize first quarter earnings at the commercial bank, we're at about 18.5 CAR, which is about 350 bps above regulatory requirements. And at the merchant bank level, they've got about nearly 16%, which again, 600 bps above the regulatory requirement. So these entities are well capitalized, and there is no pressure. Now, the second point to make is that the commercial bank is still working through the loan book, and we do think that they need a bit of more time to clean up. But the good news is once this is completed, they would meet two requirements that will allow them to upstream dividend. One, the NPL ratio will come below 5, right? And of course, we're going to have a composite risk rating of moderate, perhaps lower. So these are the two principal criteria that CBN will look at in approving dividend. We're optimistic that the commercial bank is nearly there, but to the extent that we'll continue to run profitable franchises in the insurance and the merchant bank and asset management sectors, we will continue to pay dividend to our shareholders. Thank you. A few other questions we need to clear.
Okay. I think there's a question around the impact of using NAFEX as opposed to NIFEX to revalue our books. As most of you would know, we are long on FCY, and we estimate that the impact of that move from NYFEX to NAFEX, which is about 9%, thereabouts, should translate into about 36 billion in reval gain. 36 billion in reval gain provides for more than 300 billion increase in risk-weighted assets. So we're good with that.
Okay, last question, please.
We will take our next question from Jumai Mohammed of Exotics Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for taking my questions. Still on asset quality, I wanted to ask, please, what percentage of your NPLs are SCY currently? And on Ontario, what's the timeline for resolution of that loan? And what will be percentage contributions to the NPL improvement that you talk about, that you guide to 15%? And still on the topic, what is, in your view, normalized cost of risk for the bank under IFRS 9? Thank you.
Thank you, Jumai. We'll take another question, please.
We will take our next question from Kagan Byrne of Prudential. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Sorry, I don't think you gave the number for the impact of IFRS 9 on the capital adequacy ratio. And then my next question is on why the merchant bank's capital adequacy ratio came down so much in 2017. And then if you could just talk specifically to how you improve your cost to income, just given that that cost to income ratio has come up in Q1. You know, we kind of expected that cost of income to continue to tick down. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Let's take questions.
Oil and gas NPL now boost for 50%. Upstream oil and gas alone is 42%. And that is why the current improvement in oil price is good news for us as we restructure our loans and see them come back to performing. Ontario and the cost of asset realization, for which we promised 20 billion last year, but that process is yet to be concluded, and in the course of 2018, that will be resolved. On normalized cost of risk, we did say that by 2019, that our cost of risk will be lower than 2%, and that for us will be normalized cost of risk.
Okay. On the issue of reduction or decline in capital adequacy ratio at FBN Quest Merchant Bank Limited, on slide 14, you will see where we were at 9 months and the resulting effect of payment of dividend by the entity, upstreaming of dividend to HoldCo. In 2017, FBN Quest Merchant Bank upstream total sum of 8.7 billion, which is reflected on the financial statement under note 15. If you check note 15 on the financial statement, you will see analysis of the entities that have paid dividend to the holding company. Now, that is the reason why retained earnings, because that's where ultimately result of operation will go for the year. That's why retained earnings, which is a tier one component of CAR, has gone down. However, the regulatory requirement for FBN Quest Merchant Bank is 10%. At 15.7 or 15.1%, they are still well above the regulatory requirement. And we are confident that this is adequate for the operations.
Okay. Hello. There was a question around cost-to-income ratio. And we think, we expect cost income ratio to moderate around what it is we've guided. We're comfortable with that.
I think the most important thing to say is that if you see our track record with dealing with our cost base, with all the initiatives that we have on the table today, we are pretty comfortable that we're going to rein in costs like we have done in the recent past, and by full year end we should fall within the number that we have guided.
Can we take more questions, please?
We will take our next question from Amatola Abimbola of AFR Invest. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. My question would be a follow-up to the question earlier asked on NIM. I think you responded by saying that you are going to grow your loan book in 2018 in order to reduce the impact of declining yield on investment securities. But I would like to know the sectors you'll be looking to increase your risk assets. Which sectors are growing right now that you think will be able to create some very good assets? And then my second question is on your deposit mix. I think in Q1 2018, there was a spike in term deposits. I'd like to know if there is a strategic intent to this or just a way of managing liquidity. That would be all.
Thank you. Let's take a couple of questions, additional questions.
We will take our next question from Tolu Alamutu of Exotics Capital. Please go ahead.
Sorry, I just have a very quick follow-up question, please. Can you maybe shed some light on the close to 200 billion, I think it was, of loan write-offs that we had in 2017? Because it looks like that figure is up from 53 billion in the previous year. So if you could tell us maybe what sectors those loans were in, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Can we take one more question, please?
We will take our next question from Adaronke Akinsola of Chapel Hill. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. My question again is on the impact of IFRS 9 on your capital adequacy ratio. I think to put this question into proper context, your peers disclose, say, 150 to about 200 basis points impact of IFRS 9 on CAR for first quarter. So for First Bank, what is that impact on your CAR? I think it would be really helpful if you can disclose that figure too for us. Thank you.
Okay. Let's respond and then we'll take another set. Go ahead.
Okay. So the question around IFRS 9 impact on CAR, we estimate between impact of IFRS 9 in 2018, We've already taken 11 billion through, and it is post that that we still posted, at least for the bank, a capital adequacy ratio of about 18%. So we're essentially looking at taking through additional 36 billion throughout the year. But as you know, we already booked impairment charges of about 23 billion thereabouts in the bank. So the differential we're really looking to deal with comes in at less than 1% CAR impact.
Okay. Yes, we guided on loan growth for 2018, and our focus will be on manufacturing, agro-processing, trade and consumer loan. And you can see that the FX environment, I mean, always dictate where the next market will look like. And so for manufacturers, the FX environment is positive for them to be able to import. And so they'll be able to do more, getting more of the raw materials and all that. And so also trade will move. And you can see with salaries being paid, the consumer market is, and of course, Nigeria being oil story, with oil price, with a lot of money in circulation, I mean, consumers are able to spend more. And so consumers are able to borrow more loans. And that's exactly what we're going to do. On the loan write-off, it was majorly in oil and gas sector. Thank you.
I think we've addressed the issues, so perhaps we'll take additional questions.
We will take our next question from Mayua Oni of SBG Securities. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for your presentation. I wanted to ask if you could elaborate on what you think would be contributions for e-business and insurance premium over the next 5 years, because I know you highlight those as two strong areas for NIR growth going forward. So what kind of compositions or percentage contributions you expect? And then also in your presentation, you talked about FCY costs being responsible for some of the increasing costs. So if you could give a composition of cost in percentage terms, like foreign currency versus local currency. And then also in your presentation, talking to risk management, you talked about redefined target markets talking about strengthening credit culture and governance. So if you could elaborate on what you mean by that. And then lastly, in your vision, you have a vision to consolidate position as a financial services group in Middle Africa. So I wanted to understand where you are in terms of that and what kind of opportunities or growth opportunities you see across the continent. So do you see opportunities to grow or expand in Ghana, for example, given the events happening in that market currently? Those are my questions.
Thank you very much. Please respond to the question.
Yes. On redefining target markets that we set, we mentioned earlier that we are now pursuing moderate risk appetite. And our focus are sectors with historical low NPL, which you will see in manufacturing, you will see in trade. I like to see in large agro-processing. One, that is target market. Two, is if you are moving more to investment grade. Prior to now, our portfolio of investment grade exposure was less than 20%. And we've said that in 3 years, we will move to between 40 to 45. And looking at investment grade counterparties, you hardly see one dropping in 10 years. And so you are likely to have good loan book that will allow you to do more business, while expanding your loan and loan portfolio.
Okay. Well, in the long term, this is Wale Yari, the CFO Ben Odin. In the long term, we expect contribution from other aspects of the group, i.e. ex-commercial banking group, in the long term, to be about 25%. And doing a deep dive, we expect that non-interest income as percentage of total income will be about 25%.
Let me speak about e-business. That is one area where we are quite excited with the progress that we have made and we are still making. For us, the quantum of opportunity that we see there has also informed the type of investment that we are making and our expectation in terms of future cash flows that will come from this particular line of business. We are currently ramping up on our agency banking. As I speak today, we already have close to 5,000 agents, and we expect that to ramp up rapidly. We've also set up our own digital laboratory where we are experimenting with new products and also creating partnership and alliances with fintechs. And given that platform, on the back of what we have also carried out in Nigeria, we are also extending our e-business products to all our African subsidiaries, especially DRC Congo, Ghana, and Senegal, where we intend to leverage our core competence in e-business to grow our market shares in those markets. So in the fullness of time, this is the future, and this is where we see significant growth for our franchise going forward. And that is mainly on the retail side. We've also made significant investment, and we have made good progress in digitizing our transaction banking offering, which is what we have offered to our corporate and other wholesale businesses. We are implementing an integrated cash management solution that is world-class and will compete with any of the best platform or solution that is out there. We are equally re-implementing our trade finance platform to give our wholesale businesses one single view, either from their trade finance or their corporate cash management solution. So if you put this together, what we are doing around our transaction banking and our e-business platform, and you also loop this into what we intend to do by extending the same solution to our African subsidiary. Clearly, the future of our business is in digital banking, transaction banking, both in Nigeria and outside of Nigeria, and that's quite significant. And that takes me automatically to your question around our vision of being the dominant player in Middle Africa. We currently have significant footprint in, we have footprint in Ghana, Senegal, Gambia, DRC, Congo, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. We do see significant opportunities in Ghana, Senegal, DRC, Congo, and Guinea, most especially. And we expect significant growth in the medium term, being the next 3 years, around what it is that we can bring to the table around the e-business, transaction banking, and agency banking. We are also significantly leveraging our corporate banking platform and the fact that a number of our customers also do have significant business play in those locations. So we expect that those subsidiaries that we currently have, we will move them from being net consumer of capital, which is where they are today, to begin to render optimal return on capital that have been invested over time. While harvesting those investments and making them to work better, we will be alert to opportunities to also expand our footprint on a very opportunistic basis. But in the short run, the critical market for us is Ghana, DRC, Congo, Guinea, and Senegal. To answer your question on Ghana, we find the market to be, we think the market is quite exciting and is a market we do not intend to exit. We are currently looking at different options in terms of ensuring that our franchise gets strengthened in that particular market. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ola. Further questions, please.
We'll take our next question from Christine Philpotts of Allianz Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you very much for organizing this call. I had a couple of questions specifically on cost of risk and NPL ratios. So first of all, just following up on a previous question, can you indicate what your cost of risk guidance would be for FY18 if you exclude the impact of IFRS 9? So you mentioned the 6-7% includes additional impact from IFRS 9, so I just want to get a sense of what that would have been without the IFRS 9 impact for the FY18 guidance. The second question is on Ontario. If you could just provide a little bit more color on what has been driving the delay in the resolution process, and if you could provide maybe more specifics on what are the next steps towards getting the recovery finalized. My third question is on your NPL ratios for the upstream oil and gas book. I just want to get a little bit more clarity on why we haven't seen a faster improvement in the asset quality of that book, just given that the improvement in oil prices have been happening throughout FY17. You mentioned that there were some loan write-offs in that sector, so I just want to understand kind of what's driving the underlying performance of those assets, given that the oil prices have rebounded so strongly. What else is going on that's still making those assets underperform? And lastly, in terms of your ICT NPLs, so if I look at the growth in NPLs from Q4 2017 relative to Q3 2017, it looks like it increased by 184 billion naira. But the nine mobile loan exposure is just 22 billion. So I just want to understand what else was driving that significant increase in the ICT book for FY17. Thank you.
Sorry, can you just clarify the figure you quoted? Where did you get that from? What slide?
Yeah, so I was just looking at your – so this is on the slide with the NPL and metrics. So, yeah, I was looking at slide 16 and slide 19. So it's comparing basically the split of the NPL exposure for Q1 2018 – end of year FY17, and then the previously reported NPL split in Q3 2017. And it looks like, just based on my calculation, that the increase in the gross NPL for information and communication sector is much higher than the nine mobile exposure. So I just want to understand what else was driving that.
Okay. So let's take the questions starting from the cost of risk.
Starting from the cost of risk, if we exclude IFRS 9, we'll be looking at about 4.5. For Ontario, we did say that the delays were caused by documentation and administrative issues, which we will resolve in 2018. So we are positive on that. Again, the amount is material enough that you don't want a situation where you recognize and you have to, perhaps other documentation or whatever is holding you back or you reverse. So for us, we'd rather wait and get everything sorted out, and that is what we are doing. And in 2018, that will be in the books. Now, for the oil and gas, you appreciate the fact that the real oil price movement was in Q3 and Q4. More Q4. Because we saw oil price going from 45 to 55, and now 67, even 4 or 5 months after. And so you see that the multinationals started mobilizing the assets back to field late December. And see the first cash flow you're going to be seeing will be 90 days after, which is likely to be last month of Q1 or first month of Q2. And based on IFRS, you need 2 quarters of continued cash flow before you can declassify. And that's why you still have that in the oil and gas NPL still elevated. Don't also forget that oil and gas also include Atlantic Energy. And that is why you see that that's where the real bucket is higher than the others. On the ICT, you will see that Lime Mobile if you check for the bank, for First Bank, for ICT, was 4.9%, and then 6.2%. So, you mentioned some billions. I'm not sure we have that in this presentation. And so, Nine Mobile being the key one that we have, and that which is already impaired.
Okay.
Right, just to follow up, I guess based on what you mentioned earlier, I think the nine mobile loan exposure is 22 billion. Is that correct?
It's 1.25% of our loan book. So, and I'm sure RENCAP presented something in respect of that. I mean, the market released last year, which I'm sure was a good guidance for the market.
Okay, yeah, maybe we can follow up separately, but it just seems like the NPL increase was much more significant than that, so maybe I could just follow up with you offline on that.
Okay. Thank you very much for that recommendation. So, any other question, please?
We will take our next question from Tunde Ojo of Harding Loan. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. This is Tunde from Harding Loan here. Can you please give me the size of your restructured loan book? And in addition to that, how much of that is in NPL already? And that's my first question. The other question I have is on ITO. I heard the CRO mention that earlier that this has been reclassified as performing. Did I hear that right? And if that's the case, has that happened as at the end of March? Because the ITO loan is quite sizable. So if it's already been performing as at the end of March, why is the NPL ratio still quite high if ITO is already out of it? So I just want to, if you can please clarify that statement you made earlier. And the last still on asset quality is, does your cost of risk guidance for the full year, which is 6-7%, include the recovery that you're expecting from Ontario?
Okay, thank you very much, Tunde. Thanks, Tunde.
Okay. Yes, ITO has been reclassified. If you observe, you discover that the loan book in Q1 fell materially. In fact, in First Bank Nigeria, we had over 120 billion paid down in Q1 alone. And so, if you look at NPL ratio as a combination of both the NPL reserve and loan book, so the NPL ratio would have improved better than that if we held loan constant or at least 1% growth in loan. But because loan fell materially, in Lagos alone, over 120 billion. And across, we also saw some repayments. So if you see about almost 150 billion that ordinarily you should have held in your books, you can see how that would have impacted the NPL ratio. Of course, I would have seen myself maybe on 20 or less than that. And that's why the impact of IT was not felt. I mean, and that's what you see, felt materially the way you would have loved to see it. We said on the size of structural loan is actually 6% of the loan book. You know, with ITO dropping off, so as you know, we're back to what we have. And then we expect that in the course of the year, most of these structured loans will also fall into place. And we're likely to see improved cash flows of some of the assets. We've seen some of them that might have to be for 2-3 years for us to have complete full repayment. But the good thing is that there's visibility, clear visibility on repayment. And the last one is that on Ontario. If you look at, we gave guidance. If you look at 20 billion coming in, and you look at my average, because we, don't forget that it's also based on average loan book. So my average loan book today is low, and I will have to move across before I'll get to the end. And I'm looking at 10%. So even if I achieve 10% maximum, and I factor that into my opening and my closing, and I look at what the average will look like, it's quite that the average loan book will not be too big. And so if you are looking at my cost of risk, you're going to see how that's going to manifest in it. And that's why we came to that conclusion. Again, we look at the fact that if I'm going to create a loan of about 220 billion for the year, which is about 10%, and I factor in the fact that this is an IFRS 9 environment, and I will take impairment charge from year, from day one. And so if I factor that into it, I'm looking at something like this. And that you can see as we move throughout the year, you will see how those things will pan out.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I get that. I was just, sorry, can I follow up? I just wanted to know if your cost of risk guidance include the recovery you're expecting from Ontario. That's what I wanted to know. If it's in it or excluded from that guidance.
It's excluded from the guidance.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Okay, do we have any other question in queue?
I would like to hand the call back to Mr. UK Eke for any closing remarks. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay, first I'd like to thank you for your sustained interest in FBN Holdings. You will agree that over the last 2 years, we have consistently delivered on the promises we made to you with respect to capital, with respect to cost efficiency, and of course, with respect to asset quality. We do believe that we can sustain this momentum into 2018 and beyond. The guidance we have provided, we are committing to them. And also, we do think that 2018 will be a far better year for us as a group on the back of improving macro. Finally, I'd like to also say that our view is that the stock remains undervalued, significantly so, if you take the individual businesses as we have presented, rather than a conglomerate view of the entity. And so we invite you to look through the numbers again and feel free to come back to us
for additional clarifications. Finally, we look forward to addressing you again when we release our second quarter results. Thank you so very much for participating. Bye-bye.
This concludes the FBN Holdings Financial Results Call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.